Lake Effect continues now on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. The coronavirus first began spreading rapidly in Wuhan, China late last year. Now, the number of cases worldwide is nearing 1 million, including more than 180,000 in the United States. President Donald Trump has stood by his characterization of the disease as the, quote, Chinese virus. He's insisted that it's not racist to do so and that he's just letting people know where the disease, quote, came from. An organization called Asian Americans Advancing Justice keeps track of self-reported stories of racism against Asian Americans. They've reported Asian Americans being verbally assaulted and bullied in instances related to the coronavirus outbreak. And here in Milwaukee, the restaurant Lucky Lou's, which serves Chinese and Japanese food, says it had to temporarily close due to xenophobic attacks. WUWM's race and ethnicity reporter Taryn Powell spoke with UWM history professor Rachel Buff about these racist assaults.
I mean, I think most striking to me was someone in the Trump administration, an Asian American woman, it was a reporter saying that White House staff in front of her referred to the novel coronavirus as the Kung Fu virus. And then she said, you know, what do they call it when I'm not around? Like, if they'll do that in front of me. You know, and I guess what I want to say more broadly is what we've seen since 2016 is an amplification by which the sitting executive gives direct assent to white supremacist ideas, and then we see them become more and more common. Now, it's not that it starts in 2016, right? We can talk about a long history of anti-Asian racism and different periods of where that's more and less virulent. And we can talk about the long white supremacist history of the country. But there's something very intense and different about having someone who represents our country, who says in front of reporters, no, I'm going to call it the Chinese virus. You know, that's very intense and it diffuses, I would say, around the country.
So what can you tell us about other periods of time where some people in the U.S. have blamed or been critical of racial ethnic minorities based on their national origin or based on what was happening in the country?
Just thinking about anti-Asian racism for a minute, the history really begins, or a history begins, with the migration of Chinese to the United States, first, you know, around the period of the 1850s, and the incredibly rapid and virulent xenophobia and racism mobilized against them. So in the form of anti-alien laws, since Chinese were mostly coming to the West Coast, these happen in California and Oregon and Washington, but they kind of migrate west. And this kind of goes along with, and it is always the case, that this kind of racism goes along with the presence and the necessity of these people. So Chinese labor, along with indigenous and some Euro-American labor, builds, for example, the Transcontinental Railroad. But the narrative always is that these are people who are not suited to live with us. These are physical bodies that we need, but they cannot be integrated into our national body, politically, socially, culturally. They can't stay here. Mm-hmm. So that also is foundational, because in that period, what you have is the origins of immigration restrictions. So we're a settler colonial nation. There's a lot of need for people to come help, quote, settle the West, build infrastructure. But starting with the appearance of Chinese and other Asians on the West Coast in the mid to late 19th century, there starts to be a xenophobic clamor for immigration restriction, which begins foundationally with the case of the Chinese, and then, and this is really important, migrates to other people. So even if people are listening to your story and they're thinking like, oh, you know, I'm not Asian, what does this have to do with me? It's always the case that it doesn't stay. Racism and xenophobia always spill over. It starts with one group and it migrates to other groups. So you have a clamor for restriction of the Chinese coming to the West Coast, which results in the very first immigration restriction against Chinese, subsequently other Asian groups. Then it migrates to, you could say, sort of the swarthier, more identifiably different Europeans, Southern Europeans, Italians, Slavs, Jews, Catholics. And then you have, you know, very broad immigration restriction laws in effect in this country from 1924 on. So this is really very important for all of us in this country right now. You know, it is always racist to say one group's bodies are different than another group's bodies. We know that now scientifically, that genetically there's less difference between races than there is among them, that no group of people racially is more likely to catch a certain thing than another. So another place that sort of racist narratives happen is around outbreaks of disease like typhoid, which happened, people contracted who worked by the docks in the 18th and 19th century. So for a long time, the explanation was, oh, well, African people are susceptible and they carry it. And then Irish people who often worked at the docks are susceptible and they carry it. No, it's human people who happen to be in a place where those diseases are. That's always, always true. So that's like kind of the double blow of this phrase, the Chinese virus. It's racist and it's epidemiologically totally incorrect.
And that kind of leads me to my next question. For this to be happening in 2020 in an era some people will claim is a post-racial society, what do you think that says about the country that we're in this moment right now, and even in Milwaukee, because we've seen it, the xenophobia and the racism and the threats against Chinese people happen here?
Okay, so one, we have never, ever been a post-racial society. We had a black president for 8 years. Those are different things, right? Racism never went away. And in a way, the post-racial narrative is very often used to blame people of color. If we're post-racial, why are there such high percentages, for example, of black incarceration in Wisconsin? Now, if you think, as I do, that that's due to a long history of white supremacy and structural racism, meaning the disadvantaging of people of color in every single walk of life, in housing, in education, in access to jobs, every single piece of life, then it's understandable. Like in a structurally racist society, more people are going to wind up in prison. But if you say, oh, racism is over, but those folks are still in jail, that's a racist story. Because it's like, well, they must be bad. They must not be able to succeed, right? So we have never, ever been post-racial. So I think we have been here for a long time. I think we have been here way more intensely and vividly and publicly since 2016. And in a certain way, it's the perfect storm, right? So then, I mean, we're all scared and lots of stuff happens when we're scared. You know, everyone's anxious and nervous. And if we're told that we can scapegoat this to certain populations, even though we know scientifically that makes absolutely no sense, some people are going to go for it.
If we look to the past and we saw how German people were treated here, for example, how long did it take for something like this to go away, for the attitudes to get back to quote unquote normal? Can we come back from what is happening now?
It's really interesting because when you talk about World War II, I tend to think about the Japanese-American example, right? Because Germans were definitely targeted, particularly in Wisconsin during World War I. There were certainly some incarceration of German-Americans in World War I and World War II and Italian-Americans as well. But of course, there was nothing as glacial as the internment of Japanese Americans, which included, and this is really important, people who had American citizenship. So everybody who was identifiably racially Japanese was removed from the West Coast. This didn't happen to any other population during World War II. But fairly rapidly after World War II, and I think a lot of this has to do with the organization among people of color. Fairly rapidly, you know, Japan and Japanese Americans were seen as, you know, a more viable minority. However, I do think we're in a period, I think of this as like a great reset. We're in a period where, of crisis, and it's a terrible period, and there's a lot of loss and fear. However, we're seeing some possibilities emerge that did not seem likely a month ago. We're seeing some states like Ohio and Massachusetts considering decarcerating many of the people who they're holding because of the risk of contagion. We're seeing Congress consider expanding the social wage, so unemployment, access to health care, paid family and sick leaves. These are things that have been on a progressive agenda for a really long time, but have not seemed possible. So those are just examples of ways. And the thing I think about a lot is we are in this period of giant reset in which, after the pandemic, really promising things and or really terrifying things can happen. You know, like, I don't think it should escape us that as we call national and state emergencies, we can mobilize, the state can then mobilize the National Guard to make sure that people stay inside. Now, I don't think that's going to affect my neighborhood on the east side, which is mostly white. I think that having more mobilized, militarized presences in communities of color can be very violent and dangerous because it already was before you had that militarized aspect. So in this period of reset, there's a tremendous amount of possibility for progress, for collectivity, for people identifying that, you know, really the problems that we're having in this country are epidemiological and economic, and, you know, that we are best, we have always been best together. Another example could be the Great Depression and World War II, where, you know, people sort of decide to throw together despite our differences. But we could also have, you know, more division, more militarization, more repression. All of those things are possible right now.
That was Rachel Buff, an immigration historian and history professor at UW-Milwaukee. Buff spoke with WUWM race and ethnicity reporter Taryn Powell.